The Chicago Cubs have found their closer with a trade for Ryan Pressly. Is it enough to win the Central? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Monday, January 27th. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Crosby Baseball. You can follow him on Twitter. That's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. And Troy, I want to get to Steve Cohen's comments about Pete Alonso. I want to get to this really just a series of L's that the Shredder is taking, trying to rank players at different positions. But first, I'm going to say the big deal over the weekend is the second trade this offseason between the Cubs and the Astros. This one for closer Ryan Pressly, who did agree to waive his no-trade clause to go from the Astros to the Cubs. His salary is $14 million in 2025. Per reports, the Astros are going to eat $5.5 million of that. And then Presley's also getting a trade bonus to cover the additional income taxes in Illinois. So about $420,000. I just noticed taxes seem to be coming up a lot more with a lot of these deals. The Dodgers, obviously, huge state taxes in California. But Ryan Pressly now as the closer for the Cubs, Porter Hodge and Tyson Miller as the main setup men. Have the Cubs done enough to reinforce the bullpen and the lineup with the addition of Kyle Tucker where they can be considered the favorites in the Central this year?
I think that they have definitely solidified the back end of their bullpen. The front and middle of their bullpen is still fairly weak when you consider other teams' bullpens in baseball as a whole, and especially in the National League Central. But as far as the moves that they've made this offseason, in my opinion, they were already the favorites for the National League Central before trading for Ryan Pressly, and then adding Ryan Pressly just made that gap between them and the second place Milwaukee Brewers even larger on paper for 2025. I think that the Cubs are going to run away with the Central Division now as things stand.
Yeah, here's my concern with the Cubs is, and I think you kind of got to it there, the back end is okay, right? You feel good about Porter Hodge. He debuted last year, 9 saves, ERA under 2 in like 40 innings. Tyson Miller had an ERA under 250 in 60-something innings. But to your point, like Nate Pearson, Caleb Tybar, Julian Merriweather, like none of those guys instill a ton of confidence. And yes, you've got extra starters, right? It's fantastic rotation. Shota Imanaga, Justin Steele, Jameson Taillon, Matthew Boyd. It's probably the best 1-4 in the division, like easily. But the Cubs used so few starters last year. Like they had only eight starters make more than who made 5 or more starts. Like that's it. They used 11 total, but like 3 of those were just, you know, opener kind of things. They really just used 6 main starters. One guy made 10 in Jordan Wicks. Ben Brown made 8. Hayden Wineski made 7. Outside of that, it was the main 5. Assad made 29. Shota Imanaga made 29. Taillon made 28. Steele made 24. And if they have to go to the bullpen more this year, to your point, I just don't know if they have the depth and if they have the quality outside of that back end trio. And my concern is it's going to end up like the Guardians were last year, where it was the best bullpen in baseball by far, but they rode the last couple guys so hard. Those guys pitched in like 70 games where when they got to the postseason, like what was it? I think it was Manuel Clase allowed more runs in October than he did in the entire regular season because those guys had such high workloads that the stuff was a little bit diminished by the time they got to October. And I think that's my concern with the Cubs, but I do think the difference here is the Cubs have to get to October. They've just been kind of disappointing the last few years and haven't even made the postseason. So you take it, right? Like whatever you have to do to get to the postseason, I think is the order what the Cubs have to do, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We've talked about it. Their offense the last couple of seasons hasn't been bad, but it also hasn't been great. It's just kind of been somewhere in the middle. And now they've added Kyle Tucker to that lineup. Then that's going to greatly improve their offensive production. And then, as you said, they have a really good rotation that performed well in 2024, and everybody expects to perform well again in 2025. And that's, while they might not be a pitching, like what I like to call a pitching factory, like the Astros, Braves, and the other team that I normally call a pitching factory that's escaping me right now.
Yankees.
Their pitchers very rarely get hurt. Like you look at the Cubs rotation over the years, and their guys generally post fairly often and qualify for the ERA title more often than not. And so while the depth is definitely a concern, especially with like Matthew Boyd at the back of the rotation, who did not pitch much last year coming off an injury, qualifying for an ERA title out of him for sure. But Shota Imanaga will most likely do that, who has been honestly one of the better Japanese pitchers to come over to Major League Baseball and have a outstanding first year in at this level of baseball. And so while I do think that the Cubs will make the postseason in 2025 as things stand right now, and they have to win the National League Central because the wild card's going to the West and the East, but I do think they have done enough to win that National League Central, but I still don't think it's anywhere near enough to compete with the Dodgers, Phillies, or Braves for the National League as a whole.
Yeah, I don't think I'm as concerned as the third base hole as a lot of people are. I do think prospect Matt Shaw will be good, even if he stumbles a little bit early. I know there's been talk about they need to go get Bregman or trade for Arenado or something like that to fill that hole, and I really don't think that's the best move for them. They have so many infield prospects. They have so many prospects in general, right? Like, they've got outfielders who would start for anybody else who are going to be on the bench or in the minors because they have a locked-in outfield of Ian Happ, Kyle Tucker, Seiya Suzuki, Pete Crow Armstrong, like. But I do think, yeah, the pitching depth in general, they're hoping to get Cade Horton, have a normal year, their top pitching prospect. He's not the 40-man roster, but then they've got other guys who are interesting, you know, Caleb Killian, Jordan Wicks, Ben Brown, Cody Poteet, who they acquired this offseason from the Yankees in the Cody Bellinger trade. There's a lot of different options there for them to get starts, and I think the question is just going to be how those guys adjust if you have to use them. And who can slip into the bullpen if you need it. And they do, to their credit, if you pull their 40-man roster, they have like 8 relievers outside of the major league projected bullpen on the 40-man roster. Like, they are stocked in arms and a couple other non-roster invitees. So they're cognizant of they have to find a reliever. And I do think that's the easiest place to find one is like, you know, middle relief or something like that. But I agree with you. I think they're the favorites to win the division. I just don't know as of yet if I trust the depth in the starters that they didn't really have to use last year and trust the bullpen, the depth of the bullpen, to make it through a full 162 and then be effective in the postseason. I do think this deal kind of gives us a little more clarity too. We heard some reporting late last week from actually Braves MLB.com reporter Mark Bowman that the Cubs and the Braves were interested in another former Astro, Ryan Stanek. He struggled last year after signing with Seattle, then being traded to the Mets, 4.88 ERA. But 3 years before that, he was in Houston, 8-7 with a 2.90 ERA. I wonder, was the interest by the Cubs legitimate, or was that a smokescreen to get Presley to waive his no trade clause?
I think a little bit of both could be true. Like you said, they're cognizant of their relief issues. So I think that if Ryan Presley did decide not to waive his no trade clause, then they would have gone harder after Ryan Stanek once the dust settled on that. But it could have also been the case that they were showing interest in Stanek to get Presley to waive his no trade clause, because the Astros are taking a step back this year and the Cubs are taking a step forward. So for Ryan Presley, it was a decision of, do you want to continue to be on a team that's more than likely going to be in the postseason? Or do you want to be on a team that there's a chance that they're not going to make the postseason in 2025? And so he decided to waive that no trade clause, and it'll be interesting now to see if your Atlanta Braves wind up signing Ryan Stanek and adding him to that extensive pitching depth that y'all have.
Yeah, we talked about him in the Monday episode of Braves Today that's going to drop a couple hours after this goes live. I talked about him a little bit and some of the pros and cons there. Kind of wrapping up that Cubs-Astros deal, Juan Bello was the return for the Astros. International free agent in February 2022. Scouting reports on him he's very much an Astros type of guy. He has a fastball, and then he mixes three different secondaries, slider, changeup, curveball. That's one of their things. They're really big on, we want our prospect pitchers to have a lot of secondary options. You can that way, one, if you don't have the feel of something that day, you have other options. It gives you more sequencing, things like that. Organizational philosophy makes sense. Pitched to a 3.21 ERA in low A last year at the age of 19. Will be 20 this year. Kind of curious to see how that goes. But one of those trades, you clear a 40-man roster spot at the same time you do it. We see the Dodgers do this a lot when they trade a guy. We saw the Rays do this for a long time when they would trade a 40-man guy. They'd want a lower-level prospect back so that they didn't have to worry about the 40-man roster with that guy. Okay. Let's do the shortstops before we get to the Steve Cohen thing. So top 10 right now on MLB Network is going on this offseason. They're doing all the rankings of all the positions. And the Shredder is the projection system that MLB Network uses for this. And we've seen some pretty ridiculous rankings, right? You and I have had some texts back and forth on some dumb ones. Ozzie Albies, like 2 years of the last three, has been left out of the second base projections altogether. I think some of that's because this system uses the last couple of years of production to kind of make an average projection going forward. But the most egregious one came out late last week. It was the top 10 shortstops. And I'm going to start at number 10 and I'm going to count up. And there's a couple that we're going to disagree with, but there's one that's just egregiously bad. And I want to see if you guys can spot it. Okay. Number 10, Trey Turner of the Phillies. I'm okay with that. We're both Trey Turner haters. We don't think he's as good as everybody thinks. So I'm fine with him at 10. Good?
Yeah.
Willy Adames at 9. It's fine. Sure. Okay. Ellie De La Cruz at 8. Feels kind of low. Dude could be an MVP if you put everything together, but he just forgets how to make contact for like 3 weeks at a time. Whatever. Carlos Correa at 7. When he's healthy, he's still a top 10 shortstop. It's just the health thing's a question there, right? Dansby Swanson at 6. Feels a little high from an offensive perspective, right? Shortstops become so much of an offensive position now in Major League Baseball, which is wild to me. Number 5, Mookie Betts. Your defense being so bad at shortstop makes me kind of find it hard to put him in the top 5. Joe Posnanski, who was one of the writers who helped with this, said that MLB Network required them to rank him as a shortstop, not a second baseman or right fielder. Here's the egregious one. I'm sorry. I'm going to skip this. 3, Francisco Lindor. 2, Corey Seager. 1, Gunnar Henderson. The egregious one, Bobby Witt Jr. at 4. If salary didn't matter, would you take Francisco Lindor, Corey Seager, or Gunnar Henderson for one season over Bobby Witt Jr.?
Honestly, the only one that has a case for standing next to Bobby Witt Jr. is Gunnar Henderson at the number one spot. In my opinion, as things stand right now, 1 and 1A is Gunnar Henderson and Bobby Witt Jr., and you could alternate whichever one it was. It just depends on the day.
For me, I would argue that the defense for Gunnar Henderson is behind Bobby Witt Jr. Like, I don't think Gunnar Henderson's anything more than just maybe a bit above average as a defender, right? Meanwhile, Bobby Witt Jr. won the Gold Glove at shortstop. Like, you're not wrong. Gunnar Henderson's really good player. 281 average, 893 OPS, so it's a 159 OPS plus, 37 homers, 21 stolen bases. But Bobby Witt Jr., 332 average, 977 OPS, 32 homers, 31 stolen bases. He went 30 for 30, was an all-star, gold glove, silver slugger, and the runner-up for MVP, which Gunnar was fourth, but runner-up for MVP. And you put him fourth? Fourth? the three human writers, Brian Kenny, Mark DeRosa, who I have a ton of respect for, and Joe Panansky, all put BWJ number one. Which is more egregious? Leaving Ozzie Albies off of second base altogether, having Byron Buxton in the top 10 for center field, or having BWJ at number four for shortstop?
You had to make this hard for me.
I knew Buxton would get you fired up a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, man, honestly, it's really gotta be Bobby Witt Jr. I mean, these lists as a whole from the shredder have just been questionable. And I did not know that Poznanski came out and said that MLB Network has required them to rank players at certain positions.
He wrote a newsletter over the weekend and he explained his top 10 and he explained, like, I would have had Mookie Betts as like the number one or two right fielder or second baseman, but they made us put him at short. He put him at six.
Yeah. And so that kind of makes a little bit more sense as to why they do the things that they weigh the way that they do. It's just these lists as a whole, like you started off with on this segment, it's just, they're just objectively bad. Like it makes no sense. And it's from MLB Network. Like if it was from ESPN or FS1, that's one thing. They don't care about baseball other than when they put actual baseball games on the air. Outside of that, they couldn't care less about baseball. They rarely talk about it. And most of their guys don't know anything about it other than, hey, Shohei Ohtani's a good baseball player.
But Stephen A. Smith trying to talk baseball. Dude, just let it go.
Right. But it's the MLB Network puts out these lists where, again, Byron Buxton ranked third in center fielders, and he has played 100 games twice in his career. And like, he's good when he's on the field, but he's rarely on the field.
And then, he's not even that same guy anymore. He's not stealing bases like he used to. He's not hitting for as much power as he used to. He's not even the same dude. He's going off of reputation right now, pretty much. Yeah. He's not top three.
Right. No, not at all. I wouldn't even put him top 10, but like defensively, he's outstanding, but just offensively, his offense has fallen off a cliff and he's not on the field good enough for it to really matter either way. But at second base, they left off Ozzie Albies and they have Jazz Chisholm Jr. on the second base list. He's going to play third base for the Yankees, which maybe the MLB Network said, hey, you have to rank him as a second baseman. That makes no sense. Apparently, they don't pay attention to baseball and then they put Tyler Fitzgerald on the second base list. Like, they don't have a consistent way of
he's going to play second base in 25, which, right. Okay. But then Jazz isn't, to your point. So it's like, pick one. Jazz is going to play third. He didn't play second base a ton last year. Like, why is he in this list and not third base or center field where he played the majority of his games last year?
Yeah, they don't have a they need to pick a lane. They need to decide, are we going to rate players for the position that we expect them to play in the next season? Are we going to rank them for the position they played last season? Are we just going to throw stuff at the wall and hope that people engage with our content so we can get more ad revenue and show the ad suppliers, hey, look at all this engagement we got, because people get mad at our dumb stuff. But it's crazy.
To your point, the center field list, they took Aaron Judge out and put him in right. And so it's like, okay, so what are we doing then? Right. But then you don't have Jazz at third, you have him at second, and it doesn't make a ton of sense. Speaking of that center field list, I don't think we've really discussed it in depth, but Julio Rodriguez at one. Okay. He struggled last year, whatever. Jackson Merrill at two. He was amazing last year. Yes. Byron Buxton at three is dumb. He moved from seven to three in 1 year. Michael Harris, the second of the Braves at four. Mike Trout at five. I still think he should be in a corner. That's not a shredder thing. That's just an Angels thing. Number six, Brandon Marsh.
Yeah.
Brandon Marsh was sixth on this list.
He was a left fielder.
Yeah. Dalton Varsho at seven. One of the best defensive outfielders in baseball. Okay. Yeah. Garrett Mitchell of the Brewers at eight. Again, one of the better defensive outfielders on a team full of good defensive outfielders. O'Neal Cruz at nine. He played like 20 games there last year. He switched late in the year. And Lubob of the White Sox at 10. And he was bad last year. It's like, it doesn't make sense. He did fall from 3 to 10. But the criteria don't make sense on this. And I hate that we're even talking about this. But it's just, these lists sometimes are so bad. Relief pitcher. Here's an example. Okay. Which Cleveland reliever would you rather have? Emmanuel Clase, or Cade Smith?
Let me, Emmanuel Clase. That's not even a question.
Emmanuel Clase is fourth. Cade Smith is second.
Why? Oh my God, man. Yeah. What was the one and two for center fielders you read off again?
Julio Rodriguez and Jackson Merrill. Jackson Merrill was great last year. Okay. That's fine.
Julio Rodriguez has spent three seasons in Major League Baseball. In all three seasons, year over year, he has regressed offensively. His OPS plus has gone down in pretty big margins year over year offensively. He's good defensively because he's fast. He can get to a lot of balls, but that's another part of their inconsistency. Are we going to rank guys on their defense? Or are we going to rank guys on their offense? And or it's just
whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just, it's dumb, man. And it's making the sport look bad that MLB Network is the one that is putting these lists out.
The league doesn't even know ball.
Right.
The league doesn't even know ball. Just some of these lists are so dumb. Now it's hard to argue with the top four for right field, right? Aaron Judge, Kyle Tucker, Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis Jr. That makes sense, right? Would you have had Seiya Suzuki at five? Would you have had Matt Wallner at nine or Kerry Carpenter at eight? I mean, it's just odd, right? It's just surprising some of these numbers you get. Did Seiya Suzuki even play the field last year? Or was he a DH last year? Like, I don't know. It's wild to me. Okay. Let's move on real quick to the Steve Cohen thing, because this is wild. We've talked on this show at length about how Pete Alonso has screwed up his contract negotiations, whatever. The Mets had their Amazing Day fan event over the weekend at Citi Field. And Steve Cohen had some really interesting comments. I'm going to read some quotes here. This has been an exhausting conversation in negotiations. Soto was tough. This is worse. A lot of it is we've made a significant offer. I don't like the structures that are presented back to us. I think it's highly asymmetric against us. And I feel strongly about it. He was asked if Pete's going to come back. He's like, I will never say no. There's always a possibility. But the reality is we're moving forward. We continue to bring in players. As we continue to bring in players, the reality is it becomes harder to fit Pete into what is a very expensive group of players that we already have. I'm being brutally honest. I don't like the negotiations. I don't like what's being presented to us. Reportedly, one of the issues the Mets have is the short-term offers that have been presented by Scott Boras and Pete Alonso to the Mets include a buyout that has to be paid if Pete chooses to opt out of his deal. The Mets have to pay a buyout if Pete opts out. That's not the first time we've ever seen that. I believe Cody Bellinger had something like that in his deal too. If he were to opt out, they'd have to the Cubs would have had to pay a buyout to him. But at this point, is this situation almost entirely on Pete and Scott Boras now versus it being a little bit of bad on both teams?
No, it's 100% on Pete and Scott Boras. And you'd think that Scott Boras would have learned from his mistakes last year with Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery, more so Jordan Montgomery. But apparently he has not, because it's just egregiously bad what they're asking for from the Mets. They have way overvalued the value of Pete Alonso and his one trick poniness. Like Scott Boras came back and said that, something along the lines of, we're just asking for the going rate for guys of Pete Alonso's stature. You know, he's an all-star that hits that, and he's a great player, an all-star, blah, blah, blah.
But if it wasn't for the home run derby, he wouldn't be an all-star. If they had a rule that you didn't have to be an all-star to play in the home run derby, he wouldn't have been an all-star the last two seasons.
Yeah, and even last year, he was the Mets' lone representative in the All-Star game because he told Major League Baseball, I'm not going – yeah, he said, I'm the going to be the Mets' lone All-Star so I can participate in the Home Run Derby, essentially. And it's just he's regressed tremendously throughout his career. He's gotten worse year over year. He might be good in the playoffs, but, I mean, that's cool. If you're not good enough to help your team make the playoffs, then – what good is your ability in the playoffs going to do if you're sitting at home in October? It's just he's a one-trick pony whose only skill is hitting home runs, and he's gotten worse at that as his career has gone on.
Yeah, his slugging percentage has dropped in three straight years. His OPS has dropped in two straight years. Last year was the first time in 3 years he hasn't gotten an MVP vote, a single MVP vote. And 2 years ago, under a previous general manager, under Billy Epler, he rejected a seven-year, $158 million extension. So that's like $22.6 million. That would have bought out a year of arbitration, so it really comes out higher. The New York Post reported that the most recent offer from the Mets was 3 years, $70 million. They also, at the weekend, is both Mark Vientos and Brett Beatty have been working at first base. Vientos has played first base in the minors. Beatty has not. Beatty, they shipped Beatty a first baseman's glove. So I don't necessarily think that this is just trying to pressure Pete. I legitimately think they're ready to move on. They're willing to move on. They've got a bunch of options they can throw at third. You put Vento to first base. Again, he played it in the minors. He wasn't bad at it. They could have Beatty at third. They could have Luis Angel Acuña at third. They could have Ronnie Mauricio at third. That's two top prospects and a former top prospect in Beatty. They got veteran depth. Jared Young, Luis De Los Santos. And there's always dudes they can grab mid-season. The Braves grabbed Gio Urshela and plugged him in at third base for 2 months when Austin Riley got hurt. So it just, I don't know what else to say about Pete Alonso other than, even more so than Jack Flaherty, Pete Alonso feels like the guy who will be left out of this and might have to take a one-year deal as we get into spring. Like, he's the guy more so than anybody else that has completely screwed up his free agency. Worse than we've seen in a while.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I 100% agree. And there's not much good that I will ever say about the New York Mets. That's just how it is because, you know, the New York Mets they exist. But it is refreshing to see an owner like Steve Cohen, who knows baseball enough to say, hey, you know, that we're not liking the terms that we're being presented from that side because, I mean, he didn't come out and say this verbatim, but this is what he meant. Dude's not worth it. So it's refreshing. Like I like Steve Cohen. He's a good owner, and he seems like he knows baseball. I mean, he went out and told the team to spend big on Juan Soto. That was a good ad. And honestly, at this point, the Mets would be probably better suited to pivot to a guy like Alex Bregman for third base and then have Beatty and Vientos play at first base. They would add a lot more to their payroll, and they'd be on the hook for Alex Bregman for a few years. And defensively, he's great. You can throw him at the middle to back end of your lineup, and that would solidify them as the third best team in the National League East.
He's got a qualifying offer, but, I mean, you could do that. You could also maybe just – you could trade for Arenado.
Yeah.
I mean, you have so many prospects. It feels like one of them is going to work out. Maybe you trade for a guy like Eugenio Suarez and let him do it for 1 year, and then he walks in free agency. I mean, there's lots of options, and I feel like I would rather go out and get a veteran third baseman on a one-year deal and let one of those prospects take the job from him. But even then, if you have three or four of these guys, one of them has to work, right? One of them has to work out. You've got time. You can figure this out. It's just absolutely wild. This has been First Pitch for Monday, January 27th. You're listening on audio. Do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell. Either way, tell your friends. FirstPitchPodcast.com to get their fill of Major League Baseball. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.